What does it mean to follow Jesus? What does it mean to follow Jesus? Today we hear from another portion of the Sermon on the Plain in Luke where Jesus is highlighting exactly what it means to follow Him. We discussed this answer in last week's Brown Bag Bible study too, and we came up with a short and sweet explanation. To follow Jesus means to live in this world, but not be of this world. To follow Jesus means to live in this world, but not be of this world. So what does it mean to live by the world's standards, first off? Well, it means to constantly acquire things through that great marketplace that is our everyday life. Think of the conditional nature of your everyday exercises. Not necessarily your exercises, but what you do every day, right? Like you give money and you receive things. Everything is like a transaction. You call people back that call you back. You ask for favors from people that just ask you for favors, and so on. Everything is based on, in other words, sort of a quid pro quo or accomplishment or accumulation. Now, I'm way too emotionally attached to UVA basketball, as many of you all know. I mean, college basketball takes up an enormous amount of time in my life. I haven't ever looked to see how many sermons I've talked about college basketball, but I'm sure it's a lot, probably too many. But nevertheless, it serves as an easy illustration for the way that the world works. Because who wins a basketball game? Whoever scores the most points, right? It's that simple. And that's the way the world works. This is what David Brooks calls resume virtues, meaning where we accumulate accolades and other types of accomplishments to sort of bolster who we are in the world. It's the oversimplified idea of like the survival of the fittest. Or theologically, we call this right-handed power. Right-handed power. In one of the opening scenes of the great film Gran Torino, starring Clint Eastwood as Walt Kowalski, who's a Korean War veteran and a 50-year retiree of the local Ford plant. In this opening scene in this neighborhood that Walt's lived in for all 50 years that he worked at the plant, he's watched the neighborhood become overcome with gang violence in these different warring gangs. And one has taken control of the neighborhood and they own the neighborhood and they're sitting on his front door. In front steps. And he doesn't like that, obviously. And so he just totally illustrates the right-handed power in the world, because what's he do? He pulls his gun out and opens the door and says, "Get off my lawn. No trespassing." Because this is exercising the power of the world. Lastly, to live by this type of power means that you're only as safe as that last score, right? Your winning streak ends the minute you lose. You're only as safe as that last interaction where you've shown somebody that you have a bigger gun than they have. This is the world. But we're not of the world, remember? And so Jesus is telling us a different way to live. In other words, if someone steps on your lawn, if you follow from what I read in the Sermon on the Plain, then you should let them come deeper or even camp out on your lawn or drive their car through your lawn. It should be theirs. If somebody scores a bucket against you in a basketball game, then instead of inbounding the ball to your teammates, you should give it back to them and say, "Shoot another easy layup." In other words, Jesus is stripping away any notion of living by right-handed accumulative power. Instead, he's exhorting us to live by the opposite. He's describing the power that's not of this world. The theologian Robert Capon describes this type of power is 180 degrees away from that straight line or that right-handed variety. It is, to introduce a phrase from Martin Luther then, left-handed power. And left-handed power is precisely paradoxical power. In other words, it's power that looks for all the world like weakness. It's intervention that seems indistinguishable then from non-intervention. It's giving up. It's letting go. It's not putting up a no trespassing sign. It's putting up a sign that says, my land is your land. That's left-handed power. So into the sermon, end of it, you've heard it from Jesus, is give up all your right-handed power ways and just let go and allow your neighbor to drive through your yard. It's that easy. It's not, right? I mean, you're looking at me like, come on, that's silly. Because it's impossible for us just to give up, isn't it? Like, has anybody ever just tried to give up? Like, in face with conflict, be like, you're right, honey. I was wrong. Like, not a but or like, you're right this time, but you remember the context at which we were talking about? I mean, there's always something. It's never just, I was wrong. Thanks, Jesus. You're telling me I got to be a doormat for the rest of my life. And who wants to be that? Not me. However, Jesus is explaining less a new ethic for how we should live than he's describing our relationship with God, our Father Almighty. He's describing, in other words, the resetted relationship between God's people and God. And this is what the Sermon on the Plain does. It resets the commandments. It recapitulates all of Israel's history into a focus on a new relationship with God instead of being based on accumulation or acquisition, which is the right-handed power that you owe this and you have to do this. This new relationship's based upon vulnerability, upon self-sacrifice. In other words, it's the way of love that, to quote Michael Curry, the presiding bishop, our collect that we read today, it says, pour into our hearts your greatest gift, Lord, which is love. It's love of even candy, like George. I mean, how many things did he love? And, you know, but that's this gift. That's what Jesus is getting us to realize today in these exhortations, is that it's all about love that tears down the boundaries of no trespassing signs and invites our neighbors onto our yard. It invites our enemies into a conversation with us. It's left-handed power, and that is the power of love. It's vulnerability and weakness. There's an incredible sermon that I commend to you that was given by Michael Gerson, the Washington Post political writer, last Sunday at the National Cathedral. It's just incredible. And I'm just going to use the first little bit to illustrate what it really means to live in this way, to be vulnerable. He opened his sermon by talking about the times that he's been at National Cathedral. After all, he's a Pulitzer Prize-winning writer and sort of in the top of his orbit. If you looked at the right-handed, the resume virtues, he's up at the top. And he goes, when your dean first invited me the first Sunday in February, I wouldn't have been nearly as interesting as I am today, because I wasn't at that point coherent at all, because I was hospitalized for depression. He goes, I could have been, in a joking way, maybe a little more interesting at times, but I certainly wouldn't have been coherent. He went on to talk about his lifelong battle with mental illness and depression, talking about the various times when he felt that black billowing sail of depression sweep over him, and he felt as if he was in a hole too deep to ever imagine how to get out of. In other words, he felt like he was in a prison in his everyday life. And he goes on to describe this in different illustrations, but at the end he talks about his relationship with God and being vulnerable and opening himself up to God and even dying to himself and dying to this idea that he'll one day live without mental illness. And he quotes a poem by G.K. Chesterton, the great English Anglican theologian. And it ends with this line, because I am Lazarus and I live. Because I am Lazarus and I live. Remember, Lazarus was the one who died but was brought back to new life with Jesus. And this is the precise power of left-handed power. Because whereas right-handed power is Darwinian, the survival of the fittest, left-handed power is Lazarene power. Meaning it means when you give up everything, you then are given new life because it can't be toppled. Right? When you open yourself up to vulnerability, when you admit your weakness, when you are just you, it can't be overcome by accumulation or acquisition, because it's all based on you letting go of things, not grabbing a hold of things. In other words, it means to die to ego and to self, and to hand yourself over so you can receive new eyes to see and new ears to hear and a new heart to love. In our gospel today, Jesus gives us one firm clue when he says that his Father, our Father in heaven, God, is merciful. And this is the answer to the question that was asked at the beginning of what does it mean to follow Jesus? Because that doesn't adequately capture left-handed power. Because the recipient of left-handed power, the one that's being shown love, doesn't follow, because that's grabbing a hold of, but rather accepts. It's not about following then as much as it is about accepting what Jesus has given you and me. Each of these exhortations that we heard are predicated upon receiving and back and forth. Whereas what Jesus is telling us is that it's accepting his love. It's accepting the fact that he gave it all up because he loves us and wanted us to know it. Let's go back to Gran Torino, the final scene of that film. Walt Kowalski is been in this battle with these gangs, right-handed power, back and forth, tit for tat, throughout the whole movie. And towards the end of the film, he shows up at dusk in front of the gang leader's house with a cigarette in his mouth, and he stands in good Clint Eastwood fashion right in front of the building. And the gang leaders come out and they say, you know, old man, you better get off this property. You're trespassing and we're going to shoot you. And they pull all of their guns on him. He sits there with his open arms and stares at them for a second. And then he reaches in with his left hand into his side pocket. And as he's pulling it out, the rain of bullets rake through his body. And the camera pans up over Kowalski, who's now laying cruciformed on the ground with blood pouring out of his body with a cigarette lighter in his left hand. What happens then is that because this happened in daylight, everybody saw who shot Walt. The gang all goes to jail. His death saves the neighborhood. Jesus' death saves us. Amen.